My last encounter with Mescalito was a cluster of four sessions which took place within four consecutive days. Don Juan called this long session a mitote. It was a peyote ceremony for peyoteros and apprentices. There were two older men about Don Juan's age, one of whom was the leader, and five younger men, including myself. The ceremony took place in the state of Chihuahua, Mexico, near the Texas border. It consisted of singing and of ingesting peyote during the night. In the daytime, women attendants who stayed outside the confines of the ceremony site supplied each man with water, and only a token of ritual food was consumed each day. Saturday, September 12, 1964. During the first night of the ceremony, Thursday, September 3, I took 8 peyote buttons. They had no effect on me, or if they did, it was a very slight one. I kept my eyes closed most of the night. I felt much better that way. I did not fall asleep, nor was I tired. At the very end of the session, the singing became extraordinary. For a brief moment, I felt uplifted and wanted to weep, but as the song ended, the feeling vanished. At sundown on Friday, September 4th, the second session began. The leader sang his peyote song, and the cycle of songs and intake of peyote buttons began once again. It ended in the morning with each man singing his own song, in unison with the others. It must have been toward the end of the session that the singing was greatly accelerated, with everybody singing at once. I perceived that something or somebody outside the house wanted to come in. I couldn't tell whether the singing was done to prevent it from bursting in or to lure it inside. I was the only one who did not have a song. They all seemed to look at me questioningly, especially the young men. I grew embarrassed and closed my eyes. Suddenly everything vanished or crumbled, and there emerged in its place the man-like figure of Mescalito I had seen 2 years before. He was sitting some distance away with his profile toward me. I stared fixedly at him, but he did not look at me. Not once did he turn. I believed I was doing something wrong, something that kept him away. I got up and walked toward him to ask about it, but the act of moving dispelled the image. It began to fade, and the figures of the men I was with were superimposed upon it. Again I heard the loud, frantic singing. I went into the nearby bushes and walked for a while. Everything stood out very clearly. I noticed I was seeing in the darkness, but it mattered very little this time. The important point was, why did Mescalito avoid me? I returned to join the group, and as I was about to enter the house, I heard a heavy rumbling and felt a tremor. The ground shook. It was the same noise I had heard in the Peyote Valley 2 years before. I ran into the bushes again. I knew that Mescalito was there and that I was going to find him, but he was not there. I waited until morning and joined the others just before the session ended. The usual procedure was repeated on the third day. I was not tired, but I slept during the afternoon. In the evening of Saturday, September 5th, the old man sang his peyote song to start the cycle once more. During this session, I chewed only one button and did not listen to any of the songs, nor did I pay attention to anything that went on. From the first moment, my whole being was uniquely concentrated on one point. I knew something terribly important for my well-being was missing. While the men sang, I asked Mescalito in a loud voice to teach me a song. My pleading mingled with the men's loud singing. Immediately I heard a song in my ears. I turned around and sat with my back to the group and listened. I heard the words and the tune over and over, and I repeated them until I had learned the whole song. It was a long song in Spanish. Then I sang it to the group several times, and soon afterwards a new song came to my ears. By morning I had sung both songs countless times. I felt I had been renewed, fortified. After the water was given to us, Don Juan gave me a bag, and we all went into the hills. It was a long, strenuous walk to a low mesa. There I saw several peyote plants, but for some reason I did not want to look at them. After we had crossed the mesa, the group broke up. Don Juan and I walked back, collecting peyote buttons, just as we had done the first time I helped him. We returned in the late afternoon of Sunday, September 6th. In the evening, the leader opened the cycle again. Nobody had said a word, but I knew perfectly well it was the last gathering. This time the old man sang a new song. A sack with fresh peyote buttons was passed around. This was the first time I had tasted a fresh button. It was pulpy but hard to chew. It resembled a hard green fruit and was sharper and more bitter than the dried buttons. Personally, I found the fresh peyote infinitely more alive. I chewed 14 buttons. I counted them carefully. I did not finish the last one, for I heard the familiar rumble that marked the presence of Mescalito. Everybody sang frantically, and I knew that Don Juan and everybody else had actually heard the noise. I refused to think that their reaction was a response to a cue given by one of them merely to deceive me. At that moment, I felt a great surge of wisdom engulfing me. A conjecture I had played with for 3 years turned then into a certainty. It had taken me 3 years to realize, or rather to find out, that whatever is contained in the cactus Lophophora williamsi had nothing to do with me in order to exist as an entity. It existed by itself, out there at large. I knew it then. I sang feverishly until I could no longer voice the words. I felt as if my songs were inside my body, shaking me uncontrollably. I needed to go out and find Mescalito or I would explode. I walked toward the peyote field. I kept on singing my songs. I knew they were individually mine, the unquestionable proof of my singleness. I sensed each one of my steps. They resounded on the ground. Their echo produced the indescribable euphoria of being a man. Each one of the peyote plants on the field shone with a bluish, scintillating light. One plant had a very bright light. I sat in front of it and sang my songs to it. As I sang, Mescalito came out of the plant, the same manlike figure I had seen before. He looked at me. With great audacity for a person of my temperament, I sang to him. There was a sound of flutes or of wind, a familiar musical vibration. He seemed to have said, as he said 2 years before, "What do you want?" I spoke very loudly. I said that I knew there was something amiss in my life and in my actions, but I could not find out what it was. I begged him to tell me what was wrong with me, and also to tell me his name so that I could call him when I needed him. He looked at me, elongated his mouth like a trumpet until it reached my ear, and then told me his name. Suddenly I saw my own father standing in the middle of the peyote field. But the field had vanished, and the scene was my old home, the home of my childhood. My father and I were standing by a fig tree. I embraced my father and hurriedly began to tell him things I had never before been able to say. Every one of my thoughts was concise and to the point. It was as if we had no time, really, and I had to say everything at once. I said staggering things about my feelings toward him, things I would never have been able to voice under ordinary circumstances. My father did not speak. He just listened, and then was pulled or sucked away. I was alone again. I wept with remorse and sadness. I walked through the peyote field calling the name Mescalito had taught me. Something emerged from a strange star-like light on a peyote plant. It was a long, shiny object, a stick of light the size of a man. For a moment it illuminated the whole field with an intense yellowish or amber light. Then it lit up the whole sky above, creating a portentous, marvelous sight. I thought I would go blind if I kept on looking. I covered my eyes and I buried my head in my arms. I had a clear notion that Mescalito told me to eat one more peyote button. I thought, I can't do that because I have no knife to cut it. "Eat one from the ground," he said to me in the same strange way. I lay on my stomach and chewed the top of a plant. It kindled me. It filled every corner of my body with warmth and directness. Everything was alive. Everything had exquisite and intricate detail, and yet everything was so simple. I was everywhere. I could see up and down and around, all at the same time. This particular feeling lasted long enough for me to become aware of it. Then it changed into an oppressive terror. Terror that did not come upon me abruptly, but somehow swiftly. At first, my marvelous world of silence was jolted by sharp noises, but I was not concerned. Then the noises became louder and were uninterrupted, as if they were closing in on me. And gradually I lost the feeling of floating in a world undifferentiated, indifferent, and beautiful. The noises became gigantic steps. Something enormous was breathing and moving around me. I believed it was hunting for me. I ran and hid under a boulder and tried to determine from there what was following me. Slowly I began to regain my usual sensorial processes. I lay on my stomach with my chin on my folded arm. The peyote plant in front of me began to light up again, and before I could move my eyes, the long light emerged again. It hovered over me. I sat up. The light touched my whole body with quiet strength and then rolled away out of sight. I ran all the way to the place where the other men were. We all returned to town. Don Juan and I stayed one more day with Don Roberto, the peyote leader. I slept all the time we were there. When we were about to leave, the young men who had taken part in the peyote sessions came up to me. They embraced me, one by one, and laughed shyly. Each one of them introduced himself. I talked with them for hours about everything except the peyote meetings. Don Juan said it was time to leave. The young men embraced me again. "Come back," one of them said. "We are already waiting for you," another one added. I drove away slowly, trying to see the older men, but none of them was there. Thursday, September 10th, 1964. To tell Don Juan about an experience always forced me to recall it step by step to the best of my ability. This seemed to be the only way to remember everything. Today I told him the details of my last encounter with Mescalito. He listened to my story attentively up to the point when Mescalito told me his name. Don Juan interrupted me there. "You're on your own now," he said. "The protector has accepted you. I'll be of very little help to you from now on. You don't have to tell me anything more about your relationship with him. You know his name now, and neither his name nor his dealings with you should ever be mentioned to a living being." I insisted that I wanted to tell him all the details of the experience because it made no sense to me. I told him I needed his assistance to interpret what I had seen. He said I could do that by myself, that it was better for me to start thinking on my own. Friday, September 11th, 1964. Again, I insisted upon having Don Juan interpret my visionary experiences. He stalled for a while. Then he spoke as if we had already been carrying on a conversation about Mescalito. "You asked him to tell you what's wrong with you, and he gave you the full picture. There can be no mistake. You can't claim you did not understand." He said, "You think there are two worlds for you, two paths, but there's only one. The protector showed you this with unbelievable clarity. The only world available to you is the world of men, and that world you cannot choose to leave. You are a man. The protector showed you the world of happiness, where there's no difference between things because there is no one there to ask about the difference. But that is not the world of men. The protector shook you out of it and showed you how a man thinks and fights. That is the world of man. And to be a man is to be condemned to that world. You have the vanity to believe you live in two worlds, but that is only your vanity. There is but one single world for us. We are men and must follow the world of men contentedly. I believe that was the lesson."